I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We're going to fight back. We're going to continue until we are a free nation. I gave 50 years for that.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm going to give the rest of my life. They have not broken me. I am not broken.
Leonard Peltier is finally free. The 80-year-old Indigenous leader walked out of prison in Florida Tuesday after nearly half a century behind bars. He's now back home in North Dakota on the tribal homelands of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians. We'll get the latest. Then to Arizona, where a Venezuelan family has been torn apart after a mother of four was pulled over for driving under the speed limit. She and two of her kids were quickly deported to Mexico, but her other children, aged 8 and 14, remain in Tucson. Plus, we look at Republican plans that could result in 20 million people losing Medicaid coverage.
Today, he's going after USAID. Trust me. Tomorrow, he will be going after the programs that impact you and your family. That is Medicaid. That is Medicare. That is community health centers. That is education. That is Pell Grants. That is affordable housing.
And today, federal workers across the United States are holding a Save Our Services Day of Action to fight back against President Trump and Elon Musk's purge of the federal workforce. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has blasted the Trump administration for holding direct talks with Russia aimed at ending the war in Ukraine without representatives of Ukraine or European nations at the table. Speaking to reporters in Kyiv earlier today, Zelensky said President Trump, quote, unfortunately lives in this disinformation space, unquote. Zelensky's remarks came after Trump on Tuesday accused Ukraine of starting the war with Russia, even though it was the Russian army that invaded Ukraine in February of 2022.
And I think I have the power to end this war. And I think it's going very well. But today I heard, oh, well, we weren't invited. Well, you've been there for 3 years. You should have ended it 3 years. You should have never started it. You could have made a deal.
Earlier today, the European Union's foreign policy chief reiterated that the EU would reject any Russia-Ukraine peace deal without the participation of Ukraine and Europe. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has declined the request of 14 Democratic state attorneys general to immediately bar Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, from accessing federal data systems. In her ruling, U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan appeared skeptical about the Trump administration's claims about Musk and DOGE's powers to carry out mass firings at government agencies. But Chutkan said she would not issue a temporary restraining order since states had not shown they would suffer, quote, imminent irreparable harm, unquote. Among the latest government agencies targeted by DOGE is the National Science Foundation, which on Tuesday fired 168 workers, about 10% of its workforce. The cuts came as the Trump administration seeks to fire nearly all probationary employees who haven't yet gained civil service protection, including even longtime government workers who were recently hired or have been there for years but were promoted to new positions. The Partnership for Public Service estimates about 250,000 federal workers are considered probationary. This evening, unionized federal government workers and at noon will hold protests in Washington, D.C. and in cities across the United States in a coordinated Save Our Services Day of Action. Meanwhile, the Houston Chronicle is reporting probationary workers at NASA will be spared from the latest round of layoffs ordered by DOGE after an 11th-hour reprieve on Tuesday. NASA is the largest customer to SpaceX, awarding over $13 billion in contracts to Elon Musk's private spaceflight company over the past decade. On Tuesday, Elon Musk defended his work to gut whole agencies across the federal government. He was speaking in a joint interview with President Trump, hosted by Fox News's far-right pundit Sean Hannity.
I think what we're seeing here is the thrashing of the bureaucracy as we try to restore democracy and the will of the people.
A court filing from the White House Office of Administration lists Elon Musk as a senior advisor to the president who's serving as an employee of the White House office and not the newly formed Department of Government Efficiency, which the White House previously said he was leading. On Tuesday, Trump dismissed reporters' questions over Musk's role, saying he's, quote, a patriot. The Senate voted 51-45 Tuesday to confirm billionaire Howard Lutnick as U.S. Commerce Secretary. Lutnick was the chief executive of the Wall Street firm Cantor Fitzgerald and co-chaired Trump's 2024 transition team. A financial disclosure form shows he has ties to more than 800 individual firms, many of which stand to benefit from Trump administration policies. Also on Tuesday, the Senate advanced the nomination of Trump's pick to head the FBI, Kash Patel. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin was among Democrats in opposition.
My Senate Republican colleagues, sadly, are willfully ignoring myriad red flags about Mr. Patel, especially his recurring instinct to threaten retribution against his political enemies and President Trump's perceived enemies.
A senior U.S. prosecutor resigned Tuesday to protest what she called a politically driven investigation into the Biden administration's climate policies. Denise Chung, the top criminal prosecutor in the Washington, D.C. office, wrote in her resignation letter she'd refused an unreasonable request made by Emil Bovee, Trump's former personal attorney, who's now acting U.S. Deputy Attorney General, to bring criminal charges over Biden-era grants by the EPA to nonprofit groups. Separately, the head of the food division at the Food and Drug Administration, Jim Jones, stepped down Tuesday to protest what he called indiscriminate cuts across the agency. In his resignation letter, Jones wrote, quote, I was looking forward to working to pursue the department's agenda of improving the health of Americans by reducing diet-related chronic disease and risks from chemicals in food, unquote. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. gave his first address to staffers at his sprawling federal agency Tuesday, promising to scrutinize the childhood vaccine schedule that prevents deadly and debilitating diseases, including measles and polio. RFK Jr.'s announcement was a direct contradiction to sworn testimony he gave earlier this month to win the support of Republican Senator Bill Cassidy, a medical doctor who spent decades working to vaccinate children. In related news, a measles outbreak in a West Texas county that's home to some of the lowest vaccination rates in the country has grown to at least 58 cases. 13 patients have been hospitalized. On Tuesday evening, the Trump administration reversed a plan to shut down the government website that ships free coronavirus tests to households after the Washington Post reported Health and Human Services officials were preparing to end the program and were considering destroying 160 million tests valued at more than $500 million. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Agriculture said Tuesday it's seeking to rehire several agency employees who'd been assigned to the federal government's response to the H5N1 avian flu outbreak before their jobs were terminated as part of the Trump administration's mass firings. In a statement, the USDA said the workers were fired in error since their jobs are considered public safety positions. Longtime political prisoner and indigenous activist Leonard Peltier walked out of a Florida prison Tuesday morning after spending nearly half a century behind bars. That afternoon, he arrived back home in North Dakota on the tribal homelands of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians to reunite with his family and community. Peltier spoke to supporters for the first time outside of prison.
We are not going to give up. We're going to win. We've been winning. We're going to continue to win. We're gonna stick together. We're gonna unite. As it is right now, we've been united all through indigenous countries, and we're gonna fight back. We're gonna continue until we are a free nation. I gave 50 years for that. You know, and I'm gonna give the rest of my life. So they have not broke me. I am not broken.
We'll have more on Leonard Peltier's historic release after headlines with Nick Tilson of the NDN Collective, who accompanied Peltier home yesterday. We'll speak to him in North Dakota. In the Gaza Strip, Hamas has proposed exchanging all remaining Israeli hostages for hundreds of Palestinian captives in one go in order to cement a permanent ceasefire and a complete Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. The offer came as Hamas said it would free six living Israeli hostages this weekend and return the bodies of four others in an accelerated timeline. Meanwhile, Israeli forces killed at least three Palestinians and injured 11 others across Gaza over the last 24 hours, despite the ongoing ceasefire. Meanwhile, Israeli far-right communications minister Shlomo Karhi said Tuesday that Israel's campaign to permanently expel Palestinians from Gaza will rely on force rather than so-called voluntary migration. His comments contradicted those claims made just 2 days earlier by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem.
Why not give Gazans a choice? Everybody said this is the largest open-air prison in the world. Not forcible eviction, not ethnic cleansing. In a war zone, people leave.
In southern Lebanon, civil defense workers say they've recovered the bodies of 23 people killed by Israel's bombardment last year. The gruesome discoveries came amidst Israel's partial withdrawal from southern Lebanon, continued attacks in the region, where residents are returning to frontline villages to find their homes shattered, entire neighborhoods leveled. This is Suhaila Dahar, who returned to her village of Kfar Kila on Tuesday.
Of course, our feeling is mixed with joy and sadness. There are still martyrs that haven't been retrieved. All the destruction can be compensated, thank God, but the martyrs won't return.
In Brazil, former President Jair Bolsonaro has been formally charged with helping stage an attempted coup and masterminding a far-right conspiracy plot to cling to power after his 2022 re-election loss to President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Brazil's attorney general said Tuesday the plot included a plan to assassinate Lula and a Supreme Court justice. The charges come 3 months after Brazilian federal authorities released a damning report accusing Bolsonaro of leading the election-denying conspiracy plot, which began in 2021 as an attempt to undermine public trust in Brazil's electoral system. The plot culminated January 8, 2023, when Bolsonaro encouraged his supporters to violently storm several government buildings in the capital, Brasilia. At least six of Bolsonaro's key allies were also formally charged on Tuesday. If convicted, Bolsonaro could face decades in prison. The CIA has expanded its use of secret drone flights over Mexico as part of Trump's aggressive campaign to target drug cartels and fentanyl labs. The undisclosed surveillance program had already begun under the Biden administration. Trump's expansion has raised more concerns over possible violations of Mexico's sovereignty. Trump has manipulated the fentanyl scare to push his administration's anti-immigrant policies and border crackdown, even though most fentanyl is smuggled by U.S. citizens through ports of entry. New York City Mayor Eric Adams is due in federal court today, where a judge is set to decide whether to grant a request by the Justice Department to drop corruption charges against him. On Tuesday, Mayor Adams refused to take questions from reporters about his deal with the Trump administration to suspend charges in exchange for Adams' cooperation with Trump's mass deportation and anti-immigrant policies.
Why don't you take questions from the press?
You're liars.
What are we lying about exactly?
Yeah, what are we lying about exactly?
Kansas has become the latest state to ban gender-affirming care for transgender children and youth after the Republican-controlled state legislature overrode the Democratic governor's veto of the measure. The new law is set to take effect this month and follows President Trump's executive order gutting gender-affirming care nationwide for trans people under the age of 19. That order was temporarily blocked by a federal judge last week. At least 26 other states already ban or restrict the life-saving care for trans children and youth. And in a victory for reproductive rights, abortion access is resumed in Missouri after a judge temporarily lifted strict regulations that block clinics from providing the procedure, even after voters approved enshrining abortion rights into the state's constitution last year. Missouri was the first state to enact a near-total abortion ban after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022. The Kansas City Planned Parenthood Clinic said Saturday it had provided the first abortion since 2022 after the judge's ruling. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Oh, and Juan, I just want to wish you a happy anniversary. That's right, folks. It's Democracy Now!'s 29th birthday. And Juan, it has been such an honor to share these 29 years with you from the beginning and with so many of our listeners and viewers. Now, some may have been with us on the first day. Maybe some people are joining us today for the first time. Well, Democracy Now! Continues and are very excited about our birthday. The more candles, the more light. Now, today, Juan, you can't see from Chicago. We only have one candle, but that's because of fire code. But that's why we are so thrilled to be here with you all today. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. And we turn now to an issue and a story we've been covering for all 29 years. We turn to Leonard Peltier. Today, I am finally free. They may have imprisoned me, but they never took my spirit. Those were the words of Leonard Peltier, the longtime political prisoner and indigenous activist who's been released from prison after spending nearly half a century behind bars for a crime he says he did not commit. On Tuesday morning, Leonard Peltier walked out of a federal prison in Florida a month after President Biden granted him clemency. The 80-year-old Peltier will now serve the remainder of his life sentence in home confinement. For decades, he's maintained his innocence over the 1975 killing of two FBI agents in a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. On Tuesday, Leonard Peltier briefly spoke after his release. You have to listen carefully. There are a lot of voices.
We are not going to give up. We're going to win. We've been winning. We're going to continue to win. We're going to stick together. We're going to unite. As it is right now, we've been united all through indigenous countries, and we're going to fight back. We're going to continue until we are a free nation. I gave 50 years for that. You know, and I'm going to give the rest of my life. So. They have not broken me.
After Leonard Peltier was released from the Coleman prison in Florida, he flew back to North Dakota, where he'll live on the tribal homelands of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians. Supporters greeted him as he landed in North Dakota. Supporters of Leonard Peltier also gathered in Florida Tuesday morning to greet him after his release. This is tracker Gina Marie Rangel-Kinone.
So our relative Leonard Peltier has been incarcerated for 50 years in a draconian system. And I'm from Arizona. We are First Nation people, and we are here to witness this as our relative walks out. This is the most important day because not only does it stand for the indigenous First Nation people here on Turtle Island, but it also stands for people internationally. This represents his incarceration represented not only other political prisoners, but people who stand for in solidarity for all humankind and humanity.
We go now to Belcourt, North Dakota, where we're joined by Nick Tilson, founder and CEO of NDN Collective, which helped lead the push to free Leonard Peltier. He accompanied Leonard home on Tuesday. Nick is a citizen of the Oglala Lakota Nation. Nick, it's great to have you back on with us. Can you describe the moment as we look at that picture? For the first time, you have Leonard Peltier in a traditional Native ribbon shirt coming out of prison. Where were you? What did Leonard say? And describe the whole scene back home.
Leonard Peltier walked out of the front doors of Coleman Prison energetic and completely dignified. When he walked out, he shook the hands of all the corrections officers, and all of them were happy to see him go. They had deep respect for him, and he came walking out And I stuck my hand out to shake his hand, and he just hugged me. And he said, I'm free. I'm finally, finally free. And he was so excited to get out of, you know, to get out of the prison. We hopped in the vehicle. We got him into the vehicle. And we started listening to Redbone and music. And he was dancing in the back seat of the car. And it was joy. It was absolute pure joy to watch him do that. And then we were able to do a ceremony for him and to wipe him off and to bless him and put prayers of protection over him and wipe him off from the things that happened there in prison. And then when we came home, when he got him back to Turtle Mountain, the streets were lined with hundreds and hundreds of people welcoming him at home, holding up signs, cheering, singing, war whooping. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful sight. I remember seeing the sign that said, Miigwech, Leonard Peltier, which in the Anishinaabe language, Miigwech means thank you. And the amount of love and gratitude in which he was embraced by his community, his people, and his movement. It was an absolutely historic and moving day. And Leonard was absolutely joyous when we rolled up to his home that we had got for him. And this is the first home Leonard Peltier had had since he was 9 years old, since he was taken away from Turtle Mountain to go off to boarding schools. And now he walked into this home that was prepared for him, and he loved it. And we prayed in that home, and we blessed out that home. And Leonard sat down on the couch and said, here, I'm finally home. And he thanked everybody. And that's the thing he wants everybody to know, is he thanks everybody around the world for fighting for him and standing up for him and never giving up on him.
And Nick, could you talk about the significance of his release for the First Nations peoples in this country and really throughout the world?
Yeah, you know, throughout how Leonard Peltier was treated in his life, how he was treated in his over-prosecution, and how he was treated in his incarceration is one of grave injustice. And that's pretty consistent of how this country has treated Indigenous people since the inception of this country. And so the release of Leonard Peltier is something that touches all of us, because all of us see a little bit of ourselves in Leonard Peltier, and we see a little bit of our struggle in Leonard Peltier. And so Leonard Peltier's release is a day of victory and liberation for Indigenous people and human rights defenders everywhere, because of the symbolism of how long this has gone on and the injustice that exists in his life, but also in the world. And so to us, it's an acknowledgement. It's an acknowledgement that what they did to Leonard Peltier was wrong. What they did to Indigenous people was wrong. And at that time in history, when Leonard and the American Indian movement were rising up, they were rising up at a time in which our ceremonies were outlawed. Our languages were outlawed. They were trying to terminate the tribes. And that uprising created pride and brought back our languages, and it brought back our culture, and it brought back our ceremony. And it was that very foundation that became the foundation that freed Leonard Peltier, because this effort to free Leonard would have not been possible if it wasn't founded in prayer, if it wasn't founded in our belief system that he fought for and that movement fought for. And so that's why this is full circle to us. That's why this means so much to us as Indian people, that everything that this country did to try to kill us off and eradicate us, Leonard Peltier being free and his liberation is a symbolism that no matter what they did to try to wipe us out, that they couldn't do so successfully, because we continue to resist and rise up and be resilient people.
And Nick, I'm wondering, in your conversations with him, did he talk at all about how he was treated while he was in prison, how his fellow inmates regarded him, or the prison officials as well?
While he was in prison, he was treated, I mean, it was hell on earth all 49 years. And he was revered and respected by the prisoners, but it was hell on earth. He never had proper medical care. He never had the medical attention that he needed, and he was in maximum security the entire time. Think about that. He was in maximum security the entire time. And so, you know, he was so happy to get out of there because of how he was treated in that place and how bad that place is, not just for Leonard Peltier, but for all prisoners who are in there.
And finally, Nick, as we wrap up, there you are. You're in Belcourt in North Dakota. We were in North Dakota for a time covering the Standing Rock Sioux fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. But talk about the conditions of Leonard Peltier's release, what he will do, how limited is he in his ability to get around?
Yeah, we're there's going to be, we'll be able to report back on that later down the road. We're actually going to be meeting with the RRC, the Residential Reentry Center, today, and his point of contact to go over what those conditions are going to be. And so we'll have more to report back on that. The good thing is he'll be able to be in and around his home. He'll be able to walk upon the land, and he'll be able to have a sense of freedom. He'll be able to participate in ceremonies. He'll be able to participate and meet with the movement and his community and families. But the specific details of his release, we're actually going to be, I'm actually right after this call, we're going to be meeting with Leonard and meeting with RRC and working through the details of what that's going to be like.
Well, Nick, thanks so much for being with us and taking on us on this journey with you. We look forward to talking to Leonard Peltier himself very soon. Nick Tilson, founder and CEO of NDN Collective. He's a citizen of the Oglala Lakota Nation, speaking to us from North Dakota, where Leonard Peltier will live. Leonard Peltier, at 80 years old, has been in prison for almost half a century, released yesterday after President Biden granted him clemency. To see all our interviews with Leonard and on the issue over the years, you can go to democracynow.org. Coming up, we go to Tucson, where a Venezuelan mother and two children have been deported to Mexico hours after a Tucson traffic stop. She was stopped for driving too slow. Her two other children, age 8 and 14, are still in Tucson. Stay with us. By Joanne Shenandoah, the late Native American singer, songwriter, activist, and citizen of the Oneida Indian Nation. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez on our 29th anniversary of this daily global news broadcast. We turn now to the impact of a flood of immigration policy changes and crackdowns over the last few weeks. President Trump has now moved to allow agents with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, carry out enforcement operations at courthouses, including in immigration courts. This comes as people are also widely reporting they've also faced detention or deportation after their regular ICE check-ins, as ICE has reportedly set new arrest quotas. We go first to Arizona, where the Tucson-based independent outlet Arizona Luminaria has been following the case of a Venezuelan family torn apart after a mother of four was pulled by Arizona public safety troopers for driving under the speed limit. She and two of her children, aged 6 and 9, were quickly deported to Mexico. But her other two kids, age 8 and 14, remain in Tucson. The deportations occurred just hours after the minor traffic stop. The mother described being handcuffed in front of her kids as the troopers called Border Patrol agents, who later turned them over to Mexican immigration officials in the border city of Nogales before they were put on a bus and driven about 2,000.